That's for Wednesday, right? The transcription? Next.
Yes, a week from today, actually, so. So, what's that? All the better. So, that got solved. So there you go. You're no longer under the bus. People stepped up. So, what we're going to do today is we are going to go over this, and I'm going to show you the results of your labor for this week. Thank you, everybody, for getting me their ratings in a reasonable time frame. I appreciate that. And
Everybody did coding sheets? Okay, she grabs one doll. She goes over to another doll. She steps on the doll. She goes over there. Takes another doll. Next to the mom. Sewa comes over, or Seika comes over. There it is. There's your
yeah.
Shirt.
Yep. Iris.
So, that's the highlight.
When she beats the bed, but I gave it to you because I didn't think she was pretending that bed was the monster. I don't know.
That's not the issue. The other doll gets out of bed so that she can be the monster. It's an interaction.
I didn't know that.
Well, let's look at it this way. This mother is beating something, right? And it's not the bed. We can assume that the child is using the mother doll to beat the monster. So there's an interaction between the mother and the monster. Even though the monster is invisible, you can...
Huh? Right.
Did we say that last
week? Yeah.
There was a two when the doll beat the monster with the doll still there.
I thought the three came because Naka gets out of bed so that mom, even though she doesn't say it, it's still a representation, and she's still removing the child from it so that mom can beat the monster. It's not like mom just beats on top of the child. To me, that's an interaction.
I don't know. It was a sequential order, because otherwise it wouldn't be much different from
Well, that's true, except that we're talking about a monster here.
Right.
No. But I think what Eric is pointing to is 3B. The child engages in a sequential pretense linking two or more pretense actions. Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes.
So the girl doll moves out of the bed so that the mother doll can swoop in and take care of the monster. It's a sequence of two actions that are both pretense oriented.
I understand that. I guess at the time I felt like if she was getting out of bed that she would move her out of bed and not the monster. Instead she was kinda like when you know what I mean? So it was simply which fly
out of bed. Yeah,
I guess it didn't even register in my head that she was taking her out of bed, she was getting out of bed herself.
People said this is the highlight, but maybe it's not the highlight. To be continued, let's see. Thank you.
That way these are four benches placed together. Translation is so much longer than English.
Yeah.
Okay, so mother goes up to the bed, steps on the doll, comes over to its position on the other side of the bed. Father does the same thing, except doesn't step on the doll. Comes over, position next to mom. Seika comes around the bed, position next to mom. Not next to dad. Takes the mother doll, puts it across, removes the girl doll, hits the monster, puts the girl doll back down. Okay, so that's what you were talking about right there?
Well, because you said,
and then
what can I do? I
wasn't sure if it counts. Sure it counts. Any behavior engaged in by this child with the doll, regardless of my prompts, counts toward the symbolic play.
Sequential?
No, that I wouldn't count that as part of the sequence.
Okay, yeah, that's
separate.
Yes.
Behavior.
So but the other one is.
But the other one is. I would agree with Eric on that. So there was a sequential pretense linking two or more pretense actions. So removing the girl doll, one. And then the mother doll swooping in and beating the monster, too. That count. This third one is separate from the first two because there was a lull and then I prompted that third action.
So I think what you were saying, you know, when she fought out of bed, like, you know, what happened, it's a good point because I think we need to then address, like, it doesn't matter always if it's logical in a way, but it just has, like, the sequence that
yeah, logic doesn't, we're not rating logic here, we're rating the quality of symbolic play engaged in by the dolls. And also, anything that the child says doesn't count toward the score, it's what they do with the props in front of them. Dolls, beds, cups, plates, whatever, it's what they do. That's really what we're focused on. It's more the sequence of events. It's part of a narrative, if you will, a behavioral narrative that she is telling me.
But the moving of the dolls, those are also sequences, but at a different level. Right?
Where? So oh, when each one.
Around, that's also a sequence, but it's
Yeah, it's qualitatively different in my mind anyway. She's removing the girl doll in order to make room for the beating to occur. So they're both linked. These dolls coming around each by themselves, they're not interactive actions, pretense actions. They're not interactive. But the girl getting out of bed to provide a way for the mother doll to beat the monster, in my mind, is sequentially linked together. It's an interaction that's linked, inextricably linked. Just following the mother doll was the first one. Following the mother doll around the other side of the bed, that doesn't do it for me. That's not a sequence in pretense.
It was a purposeful sequence, like the daughter had to move out of the way so that the mom could be the monster, but if the other example, like mom didn't have to walk first so that the next dog,
right.
You know, like they all
The later movements by the other dogs were not contingent upon the mother's movement.
Right.
But this sequential action, the girl dog getting out of bed, Naka getting out of the bed, where the mother's beating the monster on the bed was contingent upon the girl doll leaving the bed. So there was a contingency there. These dolls just moving around the bed to reposition themselves, one wasn't contingent upon the other. So when I think of it, I think about contingency. There was a, you know, I do this because you did this. That's how they're interactive in my mind. That's how they're related. I think it's a good question, though. Where do you draw the line from what counts as sequential and what doesn't? Now, if there's a lull and then I ask a prompt, if I introduce a prompt and then there's more pretense, that doesn't count either as part of the sequence. So I think those are both good questions.
Question I had in thinking about this for potential future situations is coming around the bed one after the other, I agree, wasn't a sequence. But if the girl moved two of them at the same time, then it's almost as if they were walking together. And that, to me, could be a three, just based on that.
I would agree with that. If they're walking together. We can get caught up in rules, but let's think about it conceptually, okay? Let's try that. So conceptually, the girl has to keep in her mind, and the girl meaning the subject, has to keep in her mind that has to use the left hand and the right hand to move two dolls in synchrony with each other, walking. Right? To me, that's a higher level of symbolic play than just moving one doll. Do people agree with me on that? That should be scored at a higher level. To take two dolls and move them simultaneously in sequence with each other. To me, that represents a little bit more cognitive maturity than just taking one doll and moving them in sequence.
And that's what I said last week, that pretty much any time the child employs two hands, you're going to find yourself in three.
Yeah, unless you have a sense that, the girl is holding on to a doll that's just sitting there, and really everything's going on, but she's using this doll like as a transitional object or security. That wouldn't count to me. They both have to have purposeful activity.
Two hands as far as making something happen, not just happen.
Exactly. Yeah, both dolls have to be used in symbolic play together in some way.
One of the questions I had last week, and I think hence all the three, is that I was interpreting the monster as, you know, for a child to come up with kind of an imaginary monster and then hit that monster, to me it's almost a higher level in a way than using...
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I'm of two minds on that myself. I could see that being a three, but I could also see it being a two, and I'd like to hear people's feelings about that, because this is going to come up. Every third story you look at, you're going to encounter an invisible being. Now, if a doll, the mother or father doll in particular, encounters and interacts with this invisible being is at a 3 or a 2.
I think in the way the coding system was initially drawn up, and I don't mean Brianna's, I mean the original.
Right. You'd be the expert on the original. What do you think?
They wanted you to use something. It's as if, and this child doesn't really have the option within this story, but the monster would be represented by, like, they would grab this, and this would become the monster.
Right.
Sort of thing. So,
I mean,
all we know is beating, and if we leave the child in the bed, it's almost like, you know, I'm not sure that's a 3, because you're not almost identifying where the monster is. All we're seeing is the beating. Mm-hmm. You know, when the child is taken out of the bed, not only is that the sequential action, but it's signifying, like, mom is not beating the child as well. Like, mm-hmm. there's more going on than just the beating.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of a one doll thing. Now, if she moved the bed or something and beat there, I would say that's, we've identified the monster at that point. But if we don't in some way identify the monster, then it's just a one-handed beating.
All right, that's persuasive.
No, moving the bed does identify the monster.
But it's also two forms of pretense combined.
Yeah.
So I agree with Danielle, that would represent 3B.
No, I'm saying that is, though. I'm not disagreeing with that. But if the child identified a monster, let's say over here, you know, it was being a monster without something, they're still identifying. If the child, as I understand it, what Eric is explaining here, if the child takes this flash drive cap
and says, that's the monster, and then uses a pencil, and it's the mother doll, and it's... That's a 3. But if it just... If there's some empty space here in the table, and it goes like this, that's a 2.
In the original coding system, all symbolic play at a higher level required some form of substitute.
Right.
You know, the ball,
one object
the ball
representing another.
Yeah, the ball could be Indiana Jones' boulder.
So if there's a ghost that's invisible, the child is not actually using an object to represent the ghost. The ghost is represented internally as a mental representation, but not as a physical object. So it doesn't get the higher score. Am I right about that?
I believe so. That's my understanding.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, if this were a more fine-grained coding system, you know, we could have like a 2+ would be somebody who is beating a blank space. That would be like a 2.5. Yeah, 2.5.
It's not all that different, though, than if you were to say, like, when the parents leave in the next story, they eat. If you move one doll over and have them, like walk to the kitchen and eat, the only difference between that and beating the air is wrist movement at that point.
Because
they're not symbolizing food in
right.
any way. It's just like the monster is no different than the invisible food.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's my struggle, too, because I think it is... like a high level, so not like to be able to understand this invisible thing represents something, but it's that repetitive behavior, like it's digging or it's eating or it's thinking about, and it's all viewed really similar. So, yeah, that's where I'm thinking about for the 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with about children who have higher levels of symbolic play, like my son, for example, it would be rare to even use something to represent, you know, that he would.
Like food or a monster.
So when sort of intuitive, it's not intuitive because it would seem like the invisible
right.
at a higher level. But in fact, when you observe children, I think it's very
yeah.
not find something to
right, especially at an older age. So the older the child, like this child, if we were to go back in the summer and locate her, she would be what 8 years old now. We would hope that she would actually use an object to represent the monster, food, some kind of other substance to represent food.
And then meanwhile, this child's score would be like a 2.8 instead of a flat 3 based on everything. Just based on
yeah.
one incident, you know, isn't going to affect
right.
it so greatly either.
Yeah, I didn't emphasize that because I want people to really take every single rating very seriously. In the grand scheme of things, yes, you're right, but in the interest of really nailing this,
yeah.
we want to be as precise as we can. So does that make sense to everybody? So, I mean, that was really the only story where there were discrepancies.
I don't mean that like to be wrong. I mean that if that number is slightly lower, we're calling it right, but we're only calling that a 2. That's not going to like tank their overall score and give us a but I think what you were saying was that like if we're wrong, if we're different between us, what I meant is like saying this is a 2 instead of a 3.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really change the overall understanding of that child's symbolic play if they continue to do it. Not like, well, we all need to be precise with one another. I think that's a different issue, if I'm making sense.
No, I understand what you're saying, but you know, we do want to be precise not only for inter-rater reliability purposes, but think about the overall project. We want to find out whether symbolic play is related to maternal depression, for example. And the more accurate that we are with our ratings, regardless of reliability, just if we're accurately capturing what's really going on in the child's mind, then if the hypothesis is true, we'll be more likely to find a significant relationship between this variable and maternal depression, maternal health, or whatever. So it's important for that reason as well. That we try to nail it. Otherwise, we'll be presenting posters with null findings, which we don't want to do. Because then no one will stop by and see Jennifer dead. Oh, well, if you want to, sure. Maybe we'll fly in from Uganda for that. All right, so just made some notes there. Anything else you want to look at? Now for this week, we have two, right? We have two stories to code. I mean, two children to code. So that's 10 stories. So we're upping the ante a little bit. So then, with 10 stories, it actually makes sense to calculate reliability, so I will do that for next week. I didn't do it this week, what's the point? There are only two minor discrepancies on one story, but next week we'll have 10 stories to look at with more to, I'm sure there'll be more discrepancies, so I will calculate reliability, and we'll see how we are with that. And given the trajectory we're on, I'm hoping that we can start coding will sample by the third week of April, something like that. And then it's just a race to the finish line. All right? Are they all burned? How close are we? And how fast is each one going?
Well,
I focus with my
mouth
because I'll
be around,
so I could use them, you know, the next few days. Like, those come up on Saturday or something. Will it be enough time for you to code?
Yeah, I usually
come up on Saturday or
Monday.
Anybody else
going to
be around early next week?
I can always be around. I can always be around.
We can just hang out until this is burning is done. The problem is that people had flash drives out from last week. Not everybody turned theirs in, and we didn't have enough to go around, so. No one can throw you under the bus if you throw yourself under the bus.
That's my topic for life.
So what else? What else is going on?
The family scales out.
Hey, you want to actually... You have an audience.
What do I need to tell them?
I had actually asked you if you wanted to present like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know. That's fine. Things are going well, I think. I still haven't heard back.
Can you give a little background for people?
We talked about it. They know. I showed them address.
People know what Eric's doing?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Help me vamp here. While we're burning.
Thank you. Patterns and expressions of grief in that culture, with specific interest in those who have lost a child, because it has the highest child mortality rate in the world, and no research on that. A lot of research on the experience of aged orphans, but no research on parents in what I found to be a culture where parenting is something that makes you a highly respected member of the community as well. I need to do some more research into the traditions and customs there. I haven't gotten into that portion yet because that's not really in the psych literature. So I got to dig a little deeper to find things like that. But
Kate could be helpful with that too. So if you go to that benefit,
perhaps that
you talk to her.
Yeah, she's probably still giving me a hard time misspelling. And there was going to be a family scale, but the guy that created it, it's not out and it's copyright, and the guy that created it was forced into retirement from his position for inappropriate conduct with a student, and no one can find him.
How did you find that out?
The Google.
What, was it a newspaper article or what?
Yeah. That's an article. And then I was looking for the method, and someone wrote about the method. The assessment, and they were like, unfortunately, we cannot reprint this because we cannot get in touch with the person. So they couldn't find him, dated shortly thereafter, this article about being forced into retirement. Nice severance package, though, about $400,000. Yeah.
I should do something wrong.
It's amazing what you find on the Google.
Wow.
So that one's probably out, which is probably okay, because the ICG, the index, or the inventory of complicated grief, is the main...
But you're looking at the ICGR.
ICGR, right? Which is a bit of a longer measure.
Yeah, but I like
it. Does give us more...
Yeah, there's more.
Having less stuff, it gives more room to just focus on this, which is 30, in full 37 item, I don't think the last couple items are not really relevant to that culture and everything, and that we're going to be looking into, because it is still somewhat of a diagnostic tool, and I don't need them to talk, they're more open-ended questions. I am in touch with the woman that created that, who I would love to be on my committee, and she's an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard.
I'll tell Belita you don't want her.
Belita can be the other one.
Oh, you don't want Kate. I'll tell Kate.
I don't want
that.
Kate because I don't want to have to deal with the misspellings and all of
those. Well, you have plenty of misspellings in your dissertation.
Exactly. It's about big picture, not the micromanagement.
Yeah, right.
That's a good question. No, I don't. You have a social support manager.
Yes.
In there. Brianna and I were discussing, because we got partnered up in Dr. Vadeo's class.
It makes sense.
Yeah. To talk about each other. And we have some ideas for you, my parents, too.
Oh.
Yeah, you're being a referral. Just loosen you up for what's coming.
Yeah.
But your social skills measure, and the questions we asked the mother, not social skills, social support measure, we're not sure if that is enough about the community to talk about, like, community support, because that's one of the things in the literature that has been highly correlated to positive outcomes.
Well, it's not a community support measure.
Yeah.
So it doesn't do that. So if you wanted something like that, you'd have to add a measure.
Yeah. But I also have the traumatic or 10-question trauma measure, and then when we settle on the depression measure, which is not there.
Did you get a copy of the CESD?
I haven't gotten that. I'm talking to right now because I've been going back and forth. Well, not back and forth, but a guy got back to me from Hopkins who adapted the the Hopkins Depression Scale, or the Symptom Checklist, which is a long thing, but there's a depression subscale, which he adapted and has used multiple times in Uganda.
So, right, you mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, so I want to hear,
right.
I want to play this out with him and see what, you know, if he gives me a measure that's been validated in Uganda, that would be ideal for depression, I think.
Can I ask what prompted your decision to focus on depression? I don't want to talk about the BSI.
The BSI is a possible option as well. I also have that mother's health measure that can be used. Because
you have access to those.
Yeah, there is research as well that shows mortality rate in parents who have lost children is significantly higher than those who have not. So the health is definitely something I will look at as well. We'll talk, but I need the names of those measures for my current lit review that you're...
I'll send you a copy of the IRB.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that, just so I can drop those in.
Absolutely.
It's interesting because there's a lot of interesting research, and it's kind of all wraps up with this one, or is going to, with this one author that talks about, in the West, we look at intrapsychic reactions to grief, but in Africa, they look at more community reactions, and so this is going to be an intrapsychic look in Africa.
Mm-hmm. Unless you added a community support measure.
Yeah, well, I would like to have both. If I can find something that's, you know, streamlined. We actually saw one thing, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, it didn't really capture.
Now, Belina told me you were asking for some reference in a journal called Death Education.
Yeah.
I think there's a top tier journal.
There's a lot of dead studies I pulled a fair amount from.
Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society. Yeah, things like that. But, I mean, that's where
You want to stick to more mainstream journals.
I got about 30 sources already in 5 pages, so it's all over the place. And I can pull from everywhere.
Death Education.
I didn't think, what's Death Education so bad for something on...
I've never heard of the journal, and it probably has such a small readership. Those kinds of journals pull for manuscripts that just aren't very high quality, usually. That's all.
It's not going to be in because she couldn't find it, and I'm not that determined.
Okay. I didn't know she couldn't find it. Are you sure it exists?
Yeah. I think so. I found I just didn't want to pay for it. I could have gotten it right away. But for like $50.
Oh. For $50 and then you downloaded it off the web?
Yeah. Sight unseen, I could have downloaded an article for $50. It's a little unfortunate. So that's kind of where it is. I'm also creating basically a grouping questionnaire, which is like, you know, just information.
Right, we talked about that, yeah.
Assign which, you know, have you lost someone, when, how, how old were they, and I may add a question about, was there some kind of ritual involved? You know, was there a burial ritual, or when I find out what the ritual is, and then there could be a biserial correlation.
Nice.
You like that?
Yeah.
For those who have had some kind of ritual versus those who didn't.
You know, I had mentored a dissertation a couple of years ago on adult children who had experienced the loss of a parent. And she had asked the question of her subjects, what were some of the experiences that hindered your recovery from that that death?
Yeah.
Right? And what were some of the experiences that were therapeutic for you? I don't know if you wanted to add something like that. Just
yeah. I mean, what would I?
What were barriers to your mourning process?
Would I have to hour back?
Huh?
Would I have to hour back?
No, no, no.
That?
Not necessarily.
I was just thinking of how, because I'm not, you know, on top of a qualitative.
Why not? Well,
on top of a quantitative, don't want to do a qualitative project as well.
No, no, no. But there are such things as mixed methods studies.
Yeah.
That combine qualitative and quantitative. In fact, Belita's dissertation is
called
mixed
graduating
method.
On time. That I want to stick to.
There's always that.
There is always that.
Are you separating people that have worked for him versus people that have
parents, sibling, and spouse.
Do you want to see how their experience is maybe different?
Yes, mostly on the ITG and then their outcomes.
Is that a common experience in Uganda for parents children?
Not nearly as common as the other direction, where parents leave orphans.
Yeah.
And,
but it's 17%, then it's the highest in the world.
Even in Africa, it's the highest in Uganda?
I don't know within Africa.
You're
just
saying sub-Saharan Africa, okay.
It's the highest, and it's AIDS and malaria, and then general, just general, not having medical care. Anyway, session.
Malaria is, we know it's fairly common over there.
I've got one.
And there is treatment, but, you know, it's... People don't like to talk about it so much.
Okay. So these are two different ones?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll mark that.
You're leaving?
I have session at 10.
Okay.
But.
All right.
Yeah, send me then the
idea. I got it. All right, so just two announcements. One is that I don't know if anybody's interested here. On Tuesday, April 17th at 6 o'clock in Midtown Manhattan, the Kitingesa Community Library is having a benefit led by Kate Perry, whom we saw in Eric's documentary. And there's going to be a silent auction, there's going to be music, there's going to be food. Eric's documentary might be shown. I'm still waiting to hear back from Kate. But if you're interested in going, I have the address. It's $50. It is a benefit, so that's why it costs so much money. But you do get a meal out of it. Plus, you get the company of great people who love Uganda and the Kitingesa Library. So keep that in mind. If you're interested, let me know. I'll give you further details. And then on April 20th, which is just 15 days away, Valita, my wife, is going to be defending her dissertation. And it's on Uganda and on her research in Uganda that she actually conducted before she met me. So it's on adolescence, and it's a mixed methods dissertation, so she is going to be presenting both quantitative and qualitative methods. There's a computer program that called Atlas that actually codes qualitative data. I don't know if you guys went to the presentation made by one of Hillary Vedder's colleagues at Columbia. She came. She spoke in the Gold Coast Room in Winnick about qualitative. Did you went to that?
Yeah, I remember the Atlas.
Yeah, and she talked about Atlas a little bit, but so Valita used that. But anyway, that is at 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon, the 20th. It'll be in the library. So people are invited to that if you'd like to go to that. So that's all I've got. The defense will be in the library. It's on the other side of campus, actually. It's the first entrance. If you're driving east on Northern Boulevard. Or it's east. If you're driving east on Northern Boulevard, it's the first entrance. The library is right there. There's the Tillis Center sign. If you look right behind that sign, that's the lot. It's a huge building. And there's a parking lot right there. So that's where it's going to be. And then I don't have the exact room number, but I'm sure any of the librarians could tell you where it's going to be. So that's all I've got. Anything else? You're all set? So then for next week, two more practice. There's absolutely none left. What about the ones you got back from this week? So they're all used up? There's none left over at all. That's strange. So how is it that people didn't return their flash drives until today, but you had burned a number of flash drives for next week? You see what I'm saying? So there were absolutely none that you had burned before today. Is that what you're saying?
Seven.
Huh? Seven flash drives? Or?
Yeah. And actually, three of them went to the back.
Okay, that's right. That's right. Okay, so there was two additional. Right. Gotcha. So, when do people usually do their coding? The night before, right?
I'm going to do mine Tuesday night, so I can always give you my 2 hour Wednesday.
Are you going to be around Wednesday? Can you stop in? You can put them in her mailbox.
Yeah.
And stop in on Wednesday to pick them up and do a little bit of burning. Okay. I'm here late on Wednesday nights. Does that work? And then you can use one of the computers in the computer room? Alright. And then everybody else you burn what, Wednesday evening?
Code.
I mean you code Wednesday evening?
Usually I code at school.
And then put the flash drive in Tina's mailbox. The discs take even longer.
To burn them?
Yeah.
This is taking a very long time to do it. It's like 12 minutes per one, so
Well, Melissa said she could come later and pick hers up. Okay, so Stephanie. Yeah, you could do that. Well, here's another idea. You know, I want the practice to be over by the 19th, and so we have only next week at the 19th. You know, another idea is to put four on each flash drive, and then you just have all four, but we'll only do two before next week, and then the final two the following week. Yeah. Oh, there's not enough space on them? Well, okay, how about this? We'll just break down and buy more flash drives, and I'll really appreciate it. All right? Whatever it takes. So how many ever you need, buy them, and I'll reimburse you. So that solves that. Alright. Buy hundreds if you want. Huh? 18.
How much?
How much are they? 5 apiece.
I don't know why you would need 18.
We already have how many? How many do you need each week? Oh, each one only fits one video on? Okay. And each video is 4 gigs? Okay. And how much does that work? That also works 4. So you would need 18. So 18 times 5 is 90. Alright, go for it.
Oh, snap! Hey, I'll do whatever it takes for the research. Yes. Everybody can go. You know, Tina's gonna burn these on new flash drives. So if she can drop them off early next week, if you don't mind coding early next week.
I can do it on Wednesday.
Okay. How about you?
I'm gonna ship for Saturday.
Okay, so you need one definitely. Who else can wait until early next week? You can wait. So you need one for this weekend to do it. Okay. Okay.
Do you have any? I have one and I'm trying to copy the second one.
Here's one. This one is done. So here's another one. First one. Here are two more that have videos on them. So we
I have one here that can be used for burning.
So this one is empty. This one is empty. This one that I was going to copy.